Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that, over the first half of its more than two decades of production, had a shifting sense of identity. For the past 11 years, though, its form has been fairly consistent, shaped, as it has been, by the continued presence of just we three. But that's a lot like life itself, isn't it? The fact that time gives us the opportunity to settle into, to use an old expression, a kind of groove. We're well aware that not everybody gets that kind of opportunity, or if they do, they don't take advantage of it. And even if we weren't aware of it, the two movies that we're going to be discussing this week just might educate us one way or another. The first is 9 Days, a film about souls vying at a chance for actual life. And the second is Annette, a film that is a mishmash of a musical, a doomed romance, a study of popular media, all built around a couple of murders and a girl, the Annette of the film's title, who for much of the film is played by, believe it or not, a puppet. Let's begin this week's show by imagining what might come before actual consciousness. Many, if not most of us, are plagued by the key questions involving life. Who are we and what is the point of all this? Implicit but usually unasked in these queries is this: what comes before life? That, though, is the very question that writer-director Edson Oda explores in his film 9 Days. Set on an arid plain, a lone house, comfortably if conservatively furnished, is where a man named Will, played by Winston Duke, receives and interviews a range of souls. His purpose? To determine which one will be the best choice for an open spot and an actual life. These souls, you see, are unborn, and Will, who once had been alive himself, is the gatekeeper, so to speak, of existence. How this came to be is never explained, and neither is its purpose. Filmmaker Oda simply shows us Will's process, which involves taking notes as he monitors the activities of the souls he has already approved for life, as he is shaken by the sudden death of one, and how that death affects him as he interviews the applicants who will graduate to the now open spot. 9 days, which is how long the interview process supposedly takes, is short on specifics. In fact, it's cryptic to a frustrating degree. That aside, it is long on mood, atmosphere, and especially character, as personified by the strong performances of Duke, Zazie Beetz, Bill Skarsgård, and Tony Hale.
I think with both of the movies that we're going to be talking about today, which really could not be more different than they are, I think if there is something that links them, it's that both of them have pretty kind of high-minded concepts, and you're either going to go along with them and be moved by them, or you're just never going to get it. And I was kind of in the latter camp with this one. I think that it has some lovely things in it. I think that its message is really well-intentioned, but I don't know. I never quite bought into this. And it reminded me of a lot of other movies that have kind of tried to deal with some version of the afterlife, or as you said, Dan, the before life. I thought of The Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick movie. There's a lot of images in this that were
the brilliant
that
Tree
that.
Of Life.
Yes,
let's
yes,
say.
We're both big fans. And also Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks comedy.
Yes.
But the one that these all have life in the name. The one that it most reminded me of was a movie called Afterlife by Hirokazu Koreeda.
Oh, yeah.
Which just got a release on the Criterion Collection. And if you can pick that up, it's an incredible movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also set in a strange house where these recently departed souls kind of rotate through, and they have to distill their entire existence down to a single memory. And then those memories are recreated on video. And I think there are a lot of similarities.
Ooh, yes.
with this premise. But 9 Days feels kind of like the Sundance-y version of Koreeda's film, which, for better or for worse, you may respond to one more than the other. I tend to respond more to the Koreeda side of things. I don't know. I just felt that this was, despite it being very well made, I mean, this is a first-time filmmaker, and I think he does a really good job. This was just awfully earnest, awfully cute, awfully meaningful with a capital M.
Mm-hmm.
There are scenes in it where I could hear the people around me wiping away tears and sniffling, and I just didn't quite buy it. I think that this is just not the kind of movie that I normally gravitate towards. And maybe if I saw it on a different day, it would totally affect me. Maybe if I saw it 10 years from now, it would affect me differently than it does now. But for now, I think that it's, and we can talk more about the performances, it's so well done. And I was actually pretty entertained by it all the way through. I was never bored by this movie. But at the end, it goes for a big emotional payoff, and it didn't quite click for me. But I know that's not the case with everybody. I know there are people that have been tremendously moved by this. So maybe I'm the one with the heart of stone, and maybe you'll be the bleeding heart romantic.
And that would be unusual.
Yeah, maybe.
That we switch roles here. And we saw this at the Magic Lantern Theater. And when we saw it, it was in the small theater. But interesting, within a couple of days, you went and saw it, and they had actually moved it to the large theater, and there were like 30 people there.
Yeah,
and
so it was a big size audience for a movie of this size.
So whether it got buzz, whether people were trying to escape the smoke, I don't know.
Or whether this movie and the questions that the movie poses are central to everyone's experience today. That's also a possibility.
And I'm sure that you can, even though this was made before the pandemic, you can draw obvious lines.
Yeah.
The isolation, facing your mortality.
Yep.
There's a lot of comparisons
to be drawn. And I do think that this film, whether you buy the narrative or the overarching theme, Nathan, as you pointed out, the performances are either going to make or break this, because we spend this sort of claustrophobic time with this small ensemble cast, and either that's going to work or it's not going to work. And I certainly think that putting together this sort of interesting group of people, I think that Dan, at one point, the character played by Tony Hale, you described as an aging party boy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think we have the
Tony Hale, who we all know from Arrested Development, the television show,
and
who is completely different in this film.
Right. And then Bill Skarsgård, who shows up and, of course, using the classic American accent. And he's the character that I struggled with the most, because I couldn't figure out good guy, bad guy, whatever.
Especially since this is formerly Pennywise the Clown.
Yes. I had to erase
anytime
that image.
Anytime he shows up, I'm like, okay, what is this guy?
I know. See, I mean, and I hope that doesn't plague him through the rest of his career.
Because, he's a good actor.
Because you are always sort of wondering what he's going to do next. But I thought that the two main characters, Zazie Beetz and Winston Duke, were great. And I do think that each of them had the opportunity to show, I think, sort of a range of their acting chops in this particular film. And she is so mesmerizing. She's so beautiful. It's hard to take your eyes off of her. So the performance is great. But Nathan, you're right. This is either going to work for you or it's not going to work for you. 9 days did surprisingly work for me. I was willing to cut it some slack. I thought the contrast between the stark environment on the salt flats in Utah and then the claustrophobic nature of this 50-era house in which everybody is sort of trapped, that worked for me. These larger questions, Nathan, as you point out, maybe because, we're struggling with some of these things. If I can't go outside, should I even bother?
Mm-hmm.
Should I bother to do anything? And this did work for me. And I think if people go into it with an open mind, they will enjoy it. Because what you said was you were entertained by it, even if you didn't connect with it.
Right.
100%. And that's always important.
And it's clearly aiming for an emotional response.
Right.
Well, I think for me, the movie works also. But I think the weakest link here is the screenplay, because ultimately the strength of the movie to me are the performances, the cinematography, the setting.
The set and, design.
And, right, exactly. And particular moments. For example, some of the characters who are not chosen, the character will creates a moments for them that are their best memories of what they've witnessed of
other
all the other
memories.
People's memories.
Yeah.
And there's one scene in which a guy is on the beach and he's standing in sand, and it's just wonderfully
the scene
shot.
With the woman on the bike ride.
Yes.
I think that's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, and that we stayed for the end and we saw what was shot in Brazil. And I was going, that had
the
to be the scene.
Scene.
So there's much I like about it, but the ultimate choice in the end, it's like, what was he trying to get at? What was Oda trying to tell us? Is there a change of heart here somewhere? But it's a little late for that. And I think the weakness of 9 days is the screenplay, is the story that Oda came up with. But I want to see another movie by this guy because he definitely can make a film.
Well, and I think that maybe the reason that it didn't quite connect with me is because it is going for big universal themes. And, there, you know, there's a moment at the end where a character has a lengthy monologue and it's this big theatrical moment. And I tend to appreciate a more – well, and this is ironic because we're going to be talking about Annette, which I like despite it not being this. But I tend to appreciate a more measured – kind of introspective, maybe even cerebral approach. And I think that this could have worked as, say, like a black box theater presentation or a shorter film. I mean, this is over 2 hours. And I think that if it had focused more on the smaller moments, because the smaller moments in this are actually quite beautiful at times, I think I might have appreciated it. But you're right. I mean, this movie is quite overwritten in the dialogue. I think if it had been, say, on a stage where, you know, it's not as literal, maybe it would have clicked for me better. But then again, I'm almost rewriting the movie in my head, and I don't want to do that. But this could be an indie hit. I mean, based on the audience size that I saw it with, it's possible the word of mouth will get out there, and I think a lot of people are going to like this more than I did.
Aren't we the word of mouth?
Oh, yeah, and we're the word of mouth, too. We have a megaphone here, and we're saying, you know, check out 9 Days. Yeah. Maybe you'll be into it.
And that was our discussion of 9 Days. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the strange film Annette. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Find your art and entertainment options when you visit the online community calendar at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Check out events throughout the Inland Northwest, whether you are in Spokane, Sandpoint, the Meadow, Spokane Valley, or anywhere in between. Go to SpokanePublicRadio.org, look for the colored pencil graphic, and click to find events or submit your own. SPR works to encourage the arts in a variety of ways, including our online community calendar.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the film 9 Days. Let's now move to Leos Carax's film Annette. For a film bearing the name of a central character, Annette makes little effort to let us know much, if anything, about, well, pretty much anything at all, much less that very title character. Not that Carax, director of such films as The Lovers on the Bridge and Holy Motors, has shown much propensity to make films that remotely fit mainstream tastes. It's not as if Annette doesn't have a plot. In some ways, it's a classic story. Anne, played by Marion Cotillard, is a famous opera singer. Henry, played by Adam Driver, is a performance artist slash comedian. The two meet, fall in love, and end up having a baby. Annette, played at first by a puppet, yes, a puppet, but in a climactic scene by the actress Devon McDowell. Conflicting careers, not to mention conflicting temperaments, cause problems and, well, not to give too much away, but didn't I mention in the first half of the show that a couple of murders occur? The plot, though, is far less interesting than the manner in which Annette develops. Aside from the fact that most of the dialogue is sung, we are witness to visuals of Driver performing his act in a green bathrobe, the audience responding in tandem to his quote-unquote comedy, a full-fledged storm at sea, a sex scene duet in which mouths are used to do far more than just sing, intermittent news reports that resemble a cross between Entertainment Tonight and Monty Python, and, of course, the puppet. None of it makes much sense. But then what do you expect from a screenplay that was written by Ron and Russell Mayle, the avant-garde rock-pop duo known as Sparks? Oh yeah, and they do the music too. Think Rocky Horror meets a surreal version of A Star is Born or something.
We don't often begin our discussion with a quote, but for our purposes here, I'm going to do that. So Anne Hornaday in the Washington Post said, "For audiences who prefer their movies to be as weird and even off-putting as possible, Annette comes fully wrapped as a pretentious, arty, occasionally breathtaking, ultimately misbegotten midsummer gift." And that probably captures my sentiments about the film. And I'm hoping that others feel differently so we can have a scintillating conversation about it. This film opens up brilliantly. There's this sort of montage of stage movement and song that it just sort of explodes. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But that was the high point for me, at least. Dan, you point out that at one juncture, these two characters not only fall in love, they have a baby. And that baby is a wooden puppet that looks like the Chucky doll. And so, you know, that was like sort of a game over point for me. I couldn't really move beyond that. So then I was forced to focus on other things. They live in this beautiful home with this pool that I coveted and wanted to jump right into. I thought Adam Driver's performance was certainly worth watching in terms of his energy and so forth, although it's a little reminiscent of some of the other things that he's done in the past. I kind of like my Adam Driver more in the Pattison kind of contemplative mode rather than this sort of...
The character he played in Girls?
Right, right. But Marianne Cotillard, I thought she was wasted in this film because she is such a fantastic talent. I mean, she can sing, but she just sort of walks through this with this sort of puzzled look on her face, which if I were starring in this movie, I'd probably have the same expression. But instead of like resting bitch face, she has like resting confusion face. And so that was a little bit problematic. And then there's the different wigs that people are wearing that always pulls me out of the movie, bad hair. But yeah, this was really, really a stretch for me. And I can say that in the screening that we attended, there were a limited number of audience participants, and one of them, about two-thirds of the way through, just walked out and never returned. So I am very interested and intrigued to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is kind of a beautiful mess in a lot of ways because it does have moments where I thought, well, that's stupid. And then there are moments where I thought, well, I don't understand that. And then there were moments like that opening where I thought, here we go. This is what I go to the movies to see. Mm-hmm. And there were enough of those moments that carried me through because if little else, I had no idea what I was going to see next. Like, what is the next scene possibly going to be? I mean, after that puppet baby is born with a glowing heart inside its chest, you're like, well, if that can happen, then anything can happen.
Yeah.
And anything does happen. And I know I was a much bigger fan of Leos Carax's last film, which was called Holy Motors, which is one of my favorite movies of the last decade or so. And it's even weirder than this, maybe, somehow. Although that would be a fight worth having.
But that seemed more like an indie film, and this seemed more like it was going for something
much bigger,
bigger
canvas,
right.
And you have A-list actors, and you know you have the music by Sparks, who are a recognizable commodity. But I think that this makes an interesting companion piece to Holy Motors, in the sense that I think both of them are sort of about performance and they're about illusion,
right.
And sort of the nature of artificiality and authenticity kind of coexisting within the process of filmmaking and how absurd all of it kind of is. I mean, that's basically what Holy Motors was about, and I think this continues it. I mean, the fact that the opening scene of this movie, which I agree with you is the high point, you have not only Leos Carax and the Sparks brothers all kind of convening to say, okay, we're going to start this thing now, but the actors coming in and introducing themselves, getting into character, and then going off to start the movie. So he's clearly saying, all right, this is where the curtain's opening, essentially.
And I'm always fascinated by, because the other thing that this focuses on is relationship and the meaning of a relationship, especially
that's
between
a big theme in Carax's movies,
right,
yes. Particularly male-female.
Right, between people who are performers. So you have these people who are both in the business, so to speak, but very different aspects of the business. And you always wonder, and as these celebrity relationships comprise tabloid fodder on a weekly basis, I am always curious if your life's work is acting, pretending. So what does that look like when you try to translate that to intimacy? I don't know.
Well, and there is this juxtaposition, an uncomfortable juxtaposition, in the sense that the Adam Driver character sees himself as killing the audience, whereas the Marion Cotillard character sees herself as saving the audience and rescuing them by dying. She dies for the audience's sins, essentially, and she's always carrying around an apple, so I'm sure that's a symbol.
And he's always carrying around a banana.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that?
Well, because he's a primate almost. His show is called The Ape of God. And also, there is a juxtaposition in the use of Annette, the title character, because Carax is asking us to accept this wooden doll as a human character. Within the context of the movie, it's not a wooden doll. But as an audience, we're supposed to accept it that way,
okay,
even
so
though it's
why?
Clearly
okay,
yeah, a wooden
so,
doll.
So what do you think was going on there? I mean, is that an integral part? It had to be because it's so much the focal
My
point.
My guess is, and I think he's spoken about this, although I haven't really read too many interviews with Carax, but I believe he has said that it's because it would be impossible to have this character played by a real child because of the weird things that Annette is required to do.
Why
At one point, she's levitating above an audience.
Why the creepy wooden baby rather than an animatronic
I think
baby.
Because Leo's character is just a weird dude. Okay. I don't know. Yeah. But and I know that you will not agree with this. I came to accept the creepy wooden doll as a real
and I
child.
Love creepy dolls. But for some reason, this just did not work.
Fair enough.
Papa kills people.
Yeah, yeah. What a moment.
There's been very few movies over the years in which when the final curtain goes down that I've turned whoever I was watching the movie with, in this case, Mary Pat, for many, many years now, in which I went, what was that about? And this was one of them.
My kind of theory about the nature of artificiality and how that applies to performance, that is purely conjecture on my part, but I see that as a running theme in all of his movies, especially these last two. And I think he's kind of alluding to that pretty openly in the very first scene, whether or not that's going to carry through for you or whether you find that an interesting theme at all.
And the thing is, we've talked about
how this is
opera-like, and yet so all of the main characters sing, including the little creepy puppet doll. And, so I think that's a commentary on the role of music, the role of, you know, I'm totally
the role
making
of
this
women
stuff up
within
now.
Opera.
Right,
because you're right, the Marion Cotillard character is somewhat wasted, but I think he's trying to make a point with that.
Purposely wispy, I think, or something.
Yeah,
ethereal.
I did want more of her. I will agree with you on that. Because the Adam Driver character is also so awful that after I was like, I don't know if I want to spend any more time with this guy. I mean, he's been also his stand-up comedy is terrible, but I think that's also supposed to be. I think that's intentional as well.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. It certainly isn't entertainment.
And you know what? That could have been the tagline for the movie. Whatever it is.
Yeah,
we don't know.
No kidding. And that was our discussion of Annette, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed 9 Days. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late Joseph Campbell. Life has no meaning. Each of us has meaning, and we bring it to life. It is a waste to be asking the question when you are the answer. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.